Forget about the newest app or even flying to Mars. Think bigger with theoretical physics. The first interstellar spaceship could be the size of a postage stamp, and it could transport a digital soul across the galaxy. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with a colleague of Stephen Hawking, and that starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. Theoretical physics, that's that wonderful cross between science fiction, actual science, and interpretation. Complex theories are combined with futuristic visions in a way that captivates non-scientists and people who just love popular science. Dr. Stephen Hawking was one of the best-known purveyors of this craft work, telling a story that was based in universal physics and universal theories. For instance, there's the idea of transporting human digital consciousness to faraway planets and galaxies. Now, we'll have more about that digital transport of consciousness in the next segment. Right now, though, Dr. Michio Kaku is also a theoretical physicist with the same gifts as Hawking. Dr. Kaku co-founded string theory, the follow-up theory to Albert Einstein's theories of the universe. And Dr. Kaku's new book addresses what comes after humans as well, digital mapping of every neuron, and, of course, space travel.
To take one of Elon Musk's rockets and send it to Alpha Centauri, the nearest star, it would take 70,000 years to reach the nearest star.
Wow. Dr. Kaku's new book is titled The Future of Humanity, and we start our conversation with news that he's a best-selling author again.
Professor Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at the City University of New York.
Dr. Kaku, thank you so much for coming in studio. I've been excited to speak with you. Been looking through this newest bestseller. Congratulations on that, too, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you.
Is this three or four in a row?
This is my fourth New York Times bestseller.
Congratulations. What was the appeal of becoming a physicist for you? It seemed to me that you kind of came to this conclusion a little earlier than the rest of us choose a vocation.
Well, when I was eight, something happened which changed my life. A great scientist had died, and they put a picture of his desk on the newspaper. And they said, this is the unfinished manuscript for the greatest scientist of our era. I was floored. I was mesmerized. I had to know what was this scientist's problem that he couldn't finish.
Uh-huh.
Later, I found out that it was Albert Einstein, who just died, and he couldn't finish his unified field theory. And I said to myself, that's for me. I want to complete what Einstein could not finish.
Wow.
Of course, I didn't know what he was doing. But now that's what I do professionally. I work on string theory, which we think is the missing theory that eluded Einstein for 30 years of his life, a theory of everything.
A theory of everything. Well, we will get into that a little bit later because it's prominent in this new book of yours, The Future of Humanity, Terraforming Mars, Interstellar Travel, Immortality, and Our Destiny of Beyond Earth. So you went from The Future of the Mind, which was the previous bestseller, to The Future of Humanity. Was this book, the subject of this book, always kind of on the back burner and you decided to bring it forth?
Yes, but you know, NASA was always the agency to nowhere. For 50 years, it didn't go anywhere. Now things are percolating, bubbling, and we're going back to the moon next year. Believe it or not, December 2019, we're going to send a probe around the moon, capable of carrying humans. 2023, we're going to go back to the moon. And just last month, you know, millions tuned in to Elon Musk's launching of the Falcon Heavy booster rocket. Mm-hmm. That was no ordinary rocket. First of all, that was a moon rocket. For 50 years, we haven't had a moon rocket. Now we have one. And who paid for it? Not you and me.
Right.
No, a private individual. Elon Musk basically gave it away for the public for free.
Right.
This is unheard of. We're entering a new golden age of space travel.
Space obviously is prevalent throughout this book. You spend a lot of time on space exploration. And you got into Elon Musk there a little bit, too. But this, in the private sector period, is this peak of interest, you know, Jeff Bezos, Sir Richard Branson, are you seeing that this surge is replacing, I think you said 5.5% of the budget was for NASA, not sustainable, and that was in the 60s, and now it's 0.5%. Is the private sector filling the gap for you?
I think so. I think the public sector has been too slow. It's been spinning wheels around the planet Earth. And these private individuals, when they were young kids, they watched science fiction. They read novels. They wanted to go into space, and they were so frustrated that NASA wasn't going anywhere. And they said, look, now we're billionaires. We can do it ourselves. Jeff Bezos of Amazon, he has funded his own private spaceport in Texas. He doesn't have to go to Cape Canaveral. He has his own fleet of rockets. And Elon Musk, he wants to go to Mars.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about a new vision, new energy, new money, prices are dropping. You know that the movie The Martian,
yes,
seen by millions with Matt Damon, that cost $100 million. The Indians put a space probe to Mars for $70 million. You realize the Hollywood movies about going to Mars cost more than actually going to Mars. They had to give an Oscar for Best Supporting Space Probe.
I find that pop culture references come and go on my show specifically, and I notice in my research for you, it comes up a lot too. I had one futurist come in and tell me once that it's our choice if we go the Mad Max route or the Star Trek route. It seems to me that you use Star Trek as kind of like in the middle for interstellar travel, right? Star Wars, I guess, would be galactic travel. What's the one we're in right now?
Well, we are a Type Zero civilization, making a transition to Type 1. Type 1 is planetary. They control the weather. They control planetary resources. Type 1 would be Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers.
Okay.
And so a Type 1 civilization is about 100 years distant from us, planetary like Buck Rogers. Type 2 is stellar like Star Trek. Star Trek is a stellar civilization. They play with stars. That's a federation of planets. Then you have Type 3, which is galactic. They roam the galactic space lanes, and that is Star Wars.
And that's where your theory, string theory, probably plays the most role, or am I overstating that?
That's right. String theory is the theory of everything, the theory that eluded Einstein. Einstein wanted a theory that would include gravity as well as all the other forces. And you need that if you want interstellar travel.
Okay.
To take one of Elon Musk's rockets and send it to Alpha Centauri, the nearest star, it would take 70,000 years to reach the nearest star.
Wow.
We have to have fusion drive, and beyond fusion drive, warp drive.
Is fusion drive a reality right now on Earth?
Not yet. However, we're very close to having fusion engines in France. The European Union is dumping $10 billion into their ITER fusion reactor. So we think that the next generation of rockets beyond chemical rockets could be fusion rockets in the next century. They could eventually take us to maybe 50% the speed of light.
Wow.
Now, to go beyond that, to break the light barrier, realize that Einstein is the cop on the block. You have to use general relativity to do that. You need wormholes. You have to break through the fabric of space and time. And that requires a new theory, a theory beyond Einstein, which is string theory, which is, well, it's what I do for a living.
Right. So let's talk about terraforming Mars, because it's the first thing you mentioned in the subtitle of the book. Can you please walk us through what that might look like? I imagine it has to be done in stages.
That's right. First of all, the moon is very close to us, three
right.
days away. I think in the future, people will honeymoon. People will honeymoon on the moon. It's only 3 days away, 1 week round trip, trip to the moon.
Right.
Mars is a two-year trip, and it's cold, and it's frozen. So we need, for example, in the future, satellites with mirrors to beam solar radiation down to the ice caps to melt the ice caps so that liquid water flows freely on the surface of Mars once again after billions of years. Then agriculture has to be started. Plants love carbon dioxide and they give off oxygen. That'll raise the temperature of Mars maybe 6 degrees. Once you raise it 6 degrees, then you have a good runaway greenhouse effect. Not a bad one like we might have on the Earth,
right?
But a good runaway greenhouse effect. If we can raise the temperature of Mars 6 degrees, water will flow freely like it did billions of years ago. Agriculture could blossom with genetically modified crops. Mining operations could mine ice to create rocket fuel and oxygen.
Let's stay with space travel for another minute. You said 2 years to get to Mars. I seem to remember you mentioning it in another interview, postage stamp size ship. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, my colleague Stephen Hawking says he wants to go to the stars.
Right.
He just doesn't want to go to Mars or Saturn or Pluto. He wants to go to Alpha Centauri. It turns out that if you have a postage stamp, forget the Enterprise, a postage stamp, put it on a parachute, inflate the parachute with a laser beam, you can shoot the parachute to maybe 20% the speed of light. And this is with off-the-shelf technology. And in 20 years, it could be beaming back pictures of Proxima Centauri. There's a planet, Earth-like planet, going around Proxima Centauri. And so the first starship may look like a postage stamp.
I want to kind of pivot a little bit. You've spent so much time in your other interviews with space and your string theory. I want to talk about immortality.
Sure.
For lack of a better word. Humans are fascinated with living forever, stories forever going way back. What's your take on the future of aging? And that seems like a pretty broad question, but I have an idea. You have plenty of answers.
Oh, yeah. First of all, we're interested in it because, of course, space travel is very arduous. It may take many years to go into outer space. But we're now beginning to tease apart the genes which control the aging process. About 60 genes have been isolated so far. So I think that our grandkids may have the option of hitting 30 and stopping.
Wow.
Just stopping. They may like to be 30 years old for several decades because we're getting very close to finding the genes of aging. Now, take a look at a car. Where does aging take place in a car? Well, the engine, mm-hmm. You're moving parts, and you have combustion. Where does that take place in a cell? The mitochondria. Bingo. We have now located where the damage takes place in a cell. If we can repair the cell damage, in principle, you could live forever.
Is some of this research around the CRISPR technology that was
done
over
right.
in Berkeley?
CRISPR allows you to cut and paste genes like you cut and paste origami or a sheet of paper. And so when we find the damaged genes that were damaged by the aging process, then we snip it out, replace it with a pristine, crisp, new gene. So what we do is we take the genes of millions of old people, the genes of millions of young people, and compare them using artificial intelligence, and zap. That's how we isolate where damage takes place. And then we fix the damage. And in principle, we may be able to live like a Greenland shark. A Greenland shark has lived over 400 years of age.
Wow.
We know that because the eyeball of the Greenland shark adds a layer every year, just like tree rings. You count the layers and bingo, 400.
That's amazing. Let's stay with the immortality for just a second. Talk to me, please, about the digitization of our neurons. And we're talking about the whole brain, right?
Yeah. President Barack Obama set into motion what is called the Connectome Project.
Connectome.
The Genome Project mapped our genes of our body. What about the brain and our memories? Well, the Connectome Project is to map every neuron of the human brain. Your emotions, fears, sensations, gestures, everything on a computer disk containing the location of all the neurons of your brain. Then I say, once we have a disk with your complete consciousness on it, put it on a laser beam and shoot it to the moon.
Mm.
In 1 second, your consciousness is on the moon. In 20 minutes, you're on Mars. In 1 day, you're on Pluto. No booster rockets, no radiation, no weightlessness to worry about. This is what I call laser pointing to the stars. We are essentially riding on a laser beam, which is the most efficient way to explore the universe. Now, some people ask me, Professor, what about aliens? Don't aliens use UFOs? Don't they have the same problem? Forget UFOs. I think aliens are way beyond UFOs. They laser port their consciousness across the galaxy at the speed of light. In fact, let me stick my neck out.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if outside the Earth there's a highway, a laser superhighway of billions of souls being zapped across the galaxy, and we, as humans, are too stupid to know it. Our technology is so primitive that we don't even know that right next door there could be a laser superhighway of interstellar beings traveling throughout the galaxy.
You mentioned the entire consciousness being digitized, and I have a pop culture question for you. Again, my producer and I have been fascinated with and binge-watching something called Altered Carbon on Netflix. Have you seen this one? Okay.
No.
Basically, the core technology is something called a stack, and it is the person's essence. It is their consciousness, and it's kept here at the base of the neck, and that's the only way to kill this person is to blow their stack apart, that kind of thing, right?
Okay.
But then they can take the stacks out and they put in different bodies. They're called sleeves, and you can pick up different bodies along the way. Does that sound too far-fetched?
Oh, no. In fact, there's a Silicon Valley company beginning to offer parts of this. You see, you leave a digital fingerprint, your credit card transactions, your Instagram pictures.
Google searches.
Every stupid thing you ever did on the internet is there. If you combine it together, you will get a composite image of yourself. So that in the future, when you go to the library, instead of taking a book out about Winston Churchill, you will talk to Winston Churchill. You'll talk to a hologram who has the memories, the sensations, the feelings, the mannerisms of Winston Churchill. I wouldn't mind talking to Einstein. I'd love an opportunity to talk to Albert Einstein. And one day you may have a conversation with your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter who wants to meet their famous great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather and have a nice digital conversation with you.
Wow.
Now, of course, the question is that really you? Mm. Well, to paraphrase Bill Clinton, it all depends on how you define you.
Right.
If you are a biological being, then you're talking to a tape recorder. But if you is the sum total of everything known about you, your memories, your sensations, your mannerisms, your quirks, then yeah, you are talking to you, a digitized version, which is immortal. So when your body dies, you live forever.
Well, I guess my question would be, you're a world-famous physicist. I'm not going to ask you to be a world-famous ethicist, but you are human. What about soul? Does that word trip up?
We used to have something called duality. During the Middle Ages, when people believed in a soul and the mortal body, when the mortal body died, the soul went to heaven. Then we got neuroscience in the last 50 years, and neuroscientists say, bah, humbug, there is no soul. It's just neurons. Now we're going back to the Middle Ages, because now we realize that the soul can be digitized and can be separated from the body. So in some sense, the medieval sages were correct, that your soul can survive even without the mortal body if we can digitize everything that is known about you, your records, your holographic images, your videotapes, everything, then in some sense we can live forever. And as I mentioned, we can shoot it into outer space too, and you can zap across the galaxy.
I'm cognizant of your time. You've got a full schedule today, but I'd like to touch on one last thing if we could. Transhumanism. That comes up in your book. We've talked about it on this show as what happens after Homo sapiens kind of things. You've got our destiny beyond Earth in all of this, but you've got that transhumanism in there, and I'm wondering how that plays in. Artificial intelligence or cybernetics, that type of thing?
Sure. Some people think that in the future we'll be big brains and our brain will be in a vat of liquid. It will simply think in that vat of liquid. Other people think we'll have electrodes dangling from our head. I think none of the above. I think that even though we will have superhuman powers in the future and we will essentially merge with our creations, the robots, we'll pretty much look the same because we are genetically hardwired, just like our cavemen, cavewomen ancestors, to look good to the opposite sex, to look good to our peers. Mm-hmm. We have not changed personality-wise for 100,000 years since we first emerged from Africa. And what do we want? After food, shelter, and mates, what do we want? We want to look good. We want to be attractive to the opposite sex. We want to have the respect of our peers. And so I think that, yes, we will have the ability to augment ourselves, put our consciousness inside avatars and act like Superman. We'll have all that. But after that, on a blind date, you want to take all those electrodes out and look neat, look decent. Because nobody wants to look like a freak on a blind date.
That's true. Dr. Michio Kaku, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
And congratulations on your fourth bestseller.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Michio Kaku. Dr. Kaku's new book is his fourth New York Times bestseller. It's titled The Future of Humanity: Terraforming Mars, Interstellar Travel, Immortality, and Our Destiny Beyond Earth. For links to his book, his works, the Netflix series Altered Carbon that we're binge-watching again, and the extended edit of our conversation, please go to kgoradio.com and look for the show notes story for this week. Coming up after the break, a startup that's trying to pair liberal arts skills with real-world job openings. Now, the company called Vocatio is focusing on younger people, but I can see it working across demographics. Here's an analogy from a founder.
What we were looking for here was something that almost behaves more like eHarmony, right? If you think about it, what really matters in long-term relationships and fit is compatibility. The higher the concentrations of compatibility across these 29 fields, the higher likelihood that the company will be successful, right?
Finding a job opportunity that you're compatible with. That's next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.